Good afternoon. It's just gone 4 o'clock. This is Cambridge 105 Community Radio in your city. I'm Matt Webb. What do Oscar Pereiro, Alberto Contador, Cadel Evans, Bradley Wiggins and Chris Froome all have in common? Well, they've all been crowned winners of La Tour de France in the last decade. This year, a section of the 101st Tour will be pedalled a little closer to home than normal. Back on a cold winter's day in January 2013, it was announced that Cambridge would be hosting the start of Stage 3 of the world's biggest annual sporting event on Monday the 7th of July this year. But it doesn't stop there, as the riders will pass through Yorkshire before they reach our city and then head on to Essex after the Cambridge leg. Now, La Tour de France has gained a new momentum in Britain, most notably since Bradley Wiggins' victory in 2012 and Chris Froome's win last year. So how's Cambridge preparing for the event and what cycling opportunities are available to encourage more of us to jump on two wheels locally? I've been exploring what's on offer cycling-wise in the city and surrounding areas and we'll hear more shortly. But first, let's go back to March this year. In the Grand Arcade, for 3 days, stood the Tour de France trophy. The trophy's unveiling formed part of the official countdown to the Cambridge race day. I spoke to Tim Bick, leader of Cambridge City Council at the unveiling, and asked him how the trophy's appearance marked a special day for the community.
The build-up starts here for July the 7th, as far as Cambridge is concerned. People have got something to look at here, a very elegant trophy, marking the fact that we're going to have one of the Grand Départs from here. And I think it's going to start the buzz going.
It's great that the Tour de France is coming to the city on the 7th of July. How's the planning going for it?
Planning has been going on deeply for a long time and is intensifying from now onwards. We're working closely with the authorities in Yorkshire, the authorities in London, and the authorities always in between. And it's going to be a day with thousands of people in the city centre here. We need to plan very carefully for that. It's going to be a day like no other. I'm going to have a festive feeling about it. This is the what they call the greatest sporting show on earth, and we're going to make it a day that everyone can remember it by.
Absolutely, and the trophy is on public display at the Grand Arcade until the 3rd of March. Would you encourage the public to come and see it?
Absolutely, I would. A lot of public will be coming past here anyway, but this is something to make a little detour to come and have a look at.
And the trophy then goes on a journey across Cambridge schools. Tell us more.
Yes, well, I mean, part of the legacy we're hoping from hosting this Tour de France start is that we're going to get people more engaged in cycling. And what better way than to attract the interest of kids in school, not only in the city of Cambridge, but also around the county. It's absolutely something that we want to live after the event as well as before it.
And we've just had a photo call here at the Grand Arcade, and you were lucky enough to touch the trophy. What's it like?
Very heavy. It's very elegant. It looks very light, but it is very heavy.
I also spoke to Noel Kavanagh, Cambridgeshire County Council's cycling champion. He told me how significant the trophy stay in the city was.
Oh, yeah, it's absolutely unique. It's countdown, 120 days to July the 7th, when the third stage of the Tour de France starts from Cambridge. And having the trophy here is a wonderful beginning.
Absolutely, and it's great that the Tour de France is coming to the city on the 7th of July. How's the planning going for our leg?
All the pieces of the jigsaw are getting put in place. The County Council and the City Council officers are working very closely together and they're planning out everything related to traffic control and provision for people on Parker's Piece. So it's going to be a magnificent day for residents, visitors and sports people and everyone who comes to Cambridge to see the tour.
And the trophy is on public display at the Grand Arcade until the 3rd of March. Would you encourage the public to come and see it?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. The trophy is unique in itself. It started life last year in Corsica, the 100th anniversary of the Tour de France. And when Chris Froome won the Tour last year, he was handed this trophy. So it's a bit like the Olympic torch being handed on. We've got it now here in Cambridge. And I encourage all our listeners to come in and be photographed next to it, because it's a one-off opportunity.
Much like the Olympic torch relay was.
Absolutely, yeah. And in fact, when the tour comes here, it's going to be even bigger because it's the biggest sporting event in the world. We're going to have the world's top cycling stars here, Bradley Wiggins, Chris Froome, Mark Cavendish, and all the continental stars and other global stars. So it's going to be a day to remember. So Cambridge will be put on the global map when the tour comes here on July the 7th.
So the trophy then goes, once it leaves here on the 3rd of March, it goes on to various different Cambridgeshire schools. Tell us more.
It's really good that people across Cambridgeshire are going to get the opportunity to see and hopefully even touch and be photographed with the trophy. After Cambridge, the trophy is going to go on to Thomas Clarkson School in Wisbeach, and that's Tuesday. Wednesday, it's going to go down to Sawston Village College. And Thursday, it'll be at Wychford Village College and also at Ely Cathedral. And then finally, on Friday, it'll be at Hinchinbrook School. And I believe there's going to be an event at Cambridge Rugby Club. So people across Cambridgeshire are going to have an opportunity to see this unique trophy and make the most of it.
Back in April, the official start line for Stage 3 of the Tour de France was unveiled on Parker's Piece opposite the Queen Anne car park. The city welcomed Christian Prudhomme, the Tour de France's director, where he met with the leaders of Cambridge City and Cambridgeshire County Council to see how preparations were going for the city's leg. I caught up with Christian and asked him what spectators could expect to see on the 7th of July.
So there will be huge crowds, I'm sure, here. It's a wonderful field here. It's perfect for very special events, and the Tour is a very special event. So I'm sure there will be passion and smiles on the faces of everybody. And the Tour, it's not only a sporting event. It's much more than that. It's like a big party. So, and it will be the occasion for everybody to see the champions, to see the British champions that are the best in the world today, to see Bradley Wiggins, to see Chris Froome, to see Mark Cavendish just before stage three. And we know all the sprinters would like to win stage three in London, from Cambridge to London 3-6. So it will be very special to see them just a few minutes before the start of this stage.
And very quickly, how's the planning going?
It's perfect. All the my colleagues from ASO, Amaury Sport Organisation, the company I belong to, are very confident about everything. Everything is working very well.
I also got an update from Tim Bick, leader of Cambridge City Council, about their planning for the race.
It's been going very well. It's been going for a very long time. I mean, I was just reminiscing with people here this morning that it's January last year that we gathered outside King's College to make the first announcement that the Tour de France was coming here. It was October last year that in Paris they announced that the actual route within Cambridge, and now here we are with something on the ground, and it becomes all that much more tangible now, I think, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And you're also liaising with other agencies, including the Tour team and the County Council. How have the communications been?
Well, I think they've been very good. I mean, right from the beginning, we've been working as one with all of the public agencies, County Council, City Council and Police. I think that's going very well. It'll need to go very well because there will be a lot of people here on the day.
And there's also a lot of legacy work happening in and around the city.
Yes, there is. And that's also very important for us. It's going to be a great event, but we don't want it just to be a flash in the pan. We want the Tour de France here because we want to encourage cycling in the city. We're a city that's prone to traffic gridlock, and we're growing. And so the more people that are on their bikes, the more healthier population we have, but also the more possible it is for people to get around.
That's right. And where can people find out more information and keep up to date with all the latest Cambridge stage developments?
I think they would be able to link that through the City Council website, and I would start there if they're approaching it from that local angle.
And are there any proposed places where the public should watch, where the key points are going to be along the race?
Well, the route's been published. Where we are here at the start is one of those places, and they'll be able to see the cyclists, the competitors signing in for the day's competition here. But the route from here up Regent Street, St Andrews Street, Sydney Street, Trinity Street, Trumpington Street, these are all going to be places where people will be able to stand very close to the competitors.
Meanwhile, Martin Curtis is the leader of Cambridgeshire County Council. He told me how spectators could best glimpse the action on race day.
What we would say is they need to look at the plans we've got laid out, so people will still be able to get close to the centre of town by bus. So there are lots of ways in, and the main thing we would say to people is make sure your journeys are planned.
And public transport on the day is going to be key. Are there going to be extra bus services laid on?
There are, and what we've managed to do is, because obviously the buses won't be accessible to the city either, so the plan at the moment is to have effectively a bus terminal to the north of the closed area and to the south, so people are able to get close, as close to it as we can.
can.
Tell us how the planning's going from the county council's end.
It's going very well. And, you know, obviously, you know, we've sort of been here before because of the Olympic torch relay, but this is going to be much, much bigger. Planning's at an advanced stage, and one of the things we're doing now is making sure the public are aware that the 7th of July is not going to be a normal day in the centre of Cambridge.
Finally, there's lots of legacy work going on around the county. Tell us more.
Well, we've got all sorts of stuff going on with legacy. We've got a very, very active cycling team at the county council that go out and promote cycling across the county. We've got a number of some arts funding that we've released. We've also got the Tour of the Fens cycle race, which is coming again for the second year this year, which is actually it's a 124k race. It's a big, big race, you know, and hopefully that will help us build our legacy as well.
So that's how the planning's coming on for the race from the organisers' end. But what's on offer locally to get us pedalling? Well, back in April, I spoke to Matt Parkhouse. He's the event organiser of Cambridge Cycle Swarm. Cycle Swarm involves riding a 100, 60 or 30-mile route around the city, raising money for charity and getting fit in the process, as Matt explains.
Cycle Swarm launched in May 2013. Myself and a colleague, Lily, had raised a lot in the past for a local charity, Norwich, the Community Sports Foundation. We decided to put on a cycling event. It went really, really well. We had 500 people taking part. Everybody had a fantastic day. It was for beginners and experienced cyclists alike. We put on another event in October in Ipswich time that, again, was a great success. So we decided to put a few more this year, which is how the Cambridge Cycle Swarm's come about.
And before we go on to the events, tell us about your history in cycling.
Yeah, so I've been cycling for quite a long time now. One of the biggest events we did was to cycle back from Germany last year for charity with a few friends of mine. So five of us cycled back from Koblenz, which is actually Norwich's twin city. So we cycled back from Koblenz to Koblenz Avenue in Norwich, which is near the football ground. So we were seen off by the Deputy Lord Mayor of Koblenz and returned back in by the Lord Mayor of Norwich. So that was a really exciting time. But I do a lot of road cycling with friends and local velo clubs as well. So it is kind of my thing.
So with regards to the Cycle Swarm events, tell us about the Cambridge event itself.
Yes, we're really, really excited about the Cambridge event. So as you mentioned, it's on Sunday the 8th of June. It's basically for any cycling ability. So we've already had people sign up from 10 years old to 77 years old. There are three different route lengths, so it's either 30, 60 or 100 miles. So we know that any experienced cyclists out there are just going to go off and do the 100 mile route. But we've also got the 30 mile and the 60 mile route for potentially new cyclists or people who are just getting into cycling. It starts early in the morning. The routes head out through Bottisham and Swaffham Burr back out to Denham. Then the 30-mile route will loop back into Cambridge, while the longer 60 and 100-mile routes will head out into the beautiful Cambridgeshire and Suffolk countryside. So we are really looking forward to it, and we hope other people are too.
You touched upon the different cycling lengths or distances that you've got. I take it the average person would go for the 30-mile route. Is it quite a tough thing to do? Do you have to get in training beforehand?
Not necessarily for the 30-mile route. If you've got a general level of fitness, we would say the 30-mile route's fine. If you are looking at doing the 100-mile route, we would recommend a road bike, and we would recommend that you've got some experience in doing that. None of the events are timed. They're sportives, which are basically fun runs for bikes, so you can take as long as you want to do it. We'll have rest stops along the way where people can stop. But I would recommend for the 100-mile route to be you know, something that you're used to doing, or you really want to challenge yourself to raise money for charity. But the 30-mile route, we would say that anybody can do. At our event in Ipswich last year, we actually had somebody who was 8 years old complete it. So that was really nice when they got their medal at the certificate at the end to see the achievement in the young girl's face. So yeah, as I say, anybody should be able to do the 30-mile course.
I suppose one of the legacies from your event is to get more people to actually go out and cycle.
Absolutely, yeah, that was the main aim of it. So it's not a race. The thing that, again, I keep mentioning is it about being open to all. So we want to make it for people who are new to cycling, people who just want to raise money for charity, and experienced cyclists alike. So it's open for anybody to take part.
Now, it's quite interesting how I found out about this event. It was publicised on Facebook via a paid campaign. How can people find out more? Do you have a Facebook page and things like that?
Absolutely. So there's different ways people can find out. the Cambridge Cycle Swarm is a registered British cycling event. So if you look on the British Cycling website, you can find it. I'd probably recommend going to our website, which is www.cycleswarm.co.uk. And there's details of the Cambridge event and all our other events on there. Or you can find us on social media. So if you're on Facebook, it's Cycle Swarm, and on Twitter, at Cycle Swarm.
How much does it cost to enter?
So the shorter route, the 30-mile route, is £12, and there's a £1 fee for British Cycling, and it's £15 to enter the 60 or the 100-mile route as well.
That's very reasonable, and all the money goes to charity.
Absolutely. Well, as I say, they are quite expensive things to put on, so just from our Norwich event last year, from the entry fees that came in, we were lucky enough to donate £1,500 to the charity, but I'd say it depends on how much these events cost. They are quite expensive things to put on.
Wonderful stuff. Well, the best of luck with that, and it'd be criminal not to ask you about the Tour de France. Obviously, is coming to Cambridge, and earlier today, Christian Prudhomme, the director of the Tour de France, was unveiling the start line just outside Parker's Peace, and that must be quite an exciting thing for you to experience as well. Obviously, the Tour de France coming to the UK.
Oh, so excited as a cyclist. Again, we've got links in Cambridge and Chelmsford, and the Tour de France is passing through both of those. It's the biggest cycling event in the world, so to have it passing somewhere local is absolutely amazing. I really would recommend anybody who's in Cambridge that day just going out and having a look, because the strength and the stamina and the speed and even just the endurance of the cyclists that take part in that event is crazy. So I would recommend anybody going out and seeing them go past.
And there's obviously a lot of intense training these cyclists have to do as well.
Oh, it's being a cyclist myself, I think it's the most the endurance that they have to do is unlike anything else. Some of the mountains that you'll see them cycling up in the Alps are crazy, and obviously I'm from Norfolk, so we don't know what a mountain is, but they're unbelievable athletes, and the speed that they can go on a bike is, especially downhill when they're hitting 60-70 miles an hour on a bike, I wouldn't want to be travelling that speed down some of the hills that they're going down. So as I say, I would recommend if you're in Cambridge to go and see them.
And obviously you're hoping that there will be a big legacy from the Tour de France as well to encourage more people to cycle and take part in events such as yours.
Absolutely. We've noticed that in the last couple of years with Bradley Wiggins and Chris Froome both winning the Tour de France in the last couple of years, and after the success we had at the 2012 Olympics as well. So cycling is becoming more popular now. So hopefully people will start entering events like Cycle Swarm.
I mean, once you've actually purchased the bike, it's a quite inexpensive thing to do, really. Because it just involves using your legs, your arms, and going out and finding somewhere to cycle.
It is. It's also a brilliant sport as well. You find places that you've never seen before. You're going down roads that you've never driven down. Even if you've lived in a city all your life, you will find places out on a bike and doing events such as Cycle Swarm that you've never known before. Some of the little villages and towns that you pass through are stunning. So it is a great sport.
So just to have a recap, the event takes place, the Cycle Swarm event in Cambridge takes place on Sunday the 8th of June. Where does it start?
It starts and finishes at Coldham's Commons. So it starts quite centrally. There'll be parking available at the Newmarket Park and Ride. We've spoken to the council there. So again, if anybody's got any questions about anything, then they can contact us, say at www.cycleswarm.co.uk.
Matt Parkhouse from the Cambridge Cycle Swarm event there. The Tour is Coming continues in just a moment, but in the meantime, let's hear from Coldplay. This is Paradise.
The Tour is Coming.
You're listening to The Tour is Coming on Cambridge 105, the local guide to everything cycling and Tour de France related. I'm Matt Webb. As we've heard, the Tour de France will be passing through Cambridge's historic streets on the 7th of July. But which sites will the riders take in during the race? Well, once the flag is waved, the riders will head down Regent Street, passing Downing College, Park Terrace and Emmanuel College towards St Andrew Street. When the riders reach St Andrew Street, they'll head past the popular Lion Yard Shopping Centre and St Andrew's Church towards Sydney Street. At Sydney Street, they'll go past Holy Trinity Church, down Market Street, and then towards Bridge Street. Once on Bridge Street, the riders will pass round Church Street and veer left onto Trinity Street. On Trinity Street, the riders will take in sights such as All Saints Passage, St John's Church, and King's College before reaching Trumpington Street. At Trumpington Street, the peloton will pass Corpus Christi College, Pembroke Street, and the Fitzwilliam Museum towards Trumpington Road. Once the riders reach Trumpington Road, they'll head past the Fen Causeway, Brooklands Avenue and Nuffield Hospital. At the junction with Long Road, they head straight over and down the High Street. The riders will then take in sights such as the Green Man Pub. Once they reach the junction with Hawkston and Shelford Road, the riders will veer left onto Shelford Road itself.
On Shelford Road, the race will head past Addenbrookes Road and Scottsdale's Garden Centre towards Cambridge Road. Once on Cambridge Road, the riders will leave the county and head towards Saffron Walden before reaching Essex. So that's a look at the Cambridge route in a little more detail.
La Tour is coming.
Now, one thing you'll notice about Cambridge is that it's one of the most cycle-friendly cities in the UK. Whether you're cycling to work or just pop out for a Sunday afternoon ride, you'll see many cyclists gracing the city streets and dedicated tracks. Although Cambridge is one of the most safest cities to cycle in, there are many areas which still need improvement. Simon Nuttall and John Hall from the Cambridge Cycling Campaign joined me on my afternoon show a couple of weeks ago to discuss the issue. They started by telling me a bit more about their organisation.
We exist for 8 to 80-year-olds. We want more cycling, safer cycling and better cycling facilities. So that's our simple aims. In the Cambridge area, not just Cambridge, but we go out to the villages, sort of roughly 5 to 7 miles out.
And do you find Cambridge a very cycle-friendly city as it currently is?
I would say in UK terms, it's very good. But in international terms, it's quite poor.
So saying there could be room for improvement?
Yeah, there's
then
a huge room for improvement. But you know,
When we set up the cycling campaign sort of 20 years ago, in fact, the city had actually just banned cycling from the city centre, and actually a lot of people don't really know that anymore. But yeah, you couldn't actually cycle in the central streets of the city, and that ban was in place for 13 years. And in fact, the Tour de France, which is now coming to Cambridge, is actually going to cycle through those very straight same streets that were banned. So we think that's a big success.
It's a bit ironic then.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about the Tour de France in a couple of minutes. But I was looking over your website the other day, and I noticed that you've got a cycling vision for 2016. Tell us a little bit about that.
That is our, that's our plan to basically have a comprehensive sort of network of cycle routes throughout the city, extending out beyond the city to the villages. And because we have a really lot of cycling in the city, once you get to the edge of the city, it sort of dwindles off. And the reason for that is basically because the roads are pretty scary there, places. And in the last few years, there have been some really good schemes that have connected, for instance, Horningsea to the city and Wandlebury. So we'd like to see more of those extending out, because people want to cycle, but they'll only do so if they feel it's safe to do so.
Well, that's right. And I noticed on your website you're also doing a lot of work around junction awareness and trying to get a lot of junctions improved around the city and the neighbouring villages.
Yeah, absolutely. Junctions are very important. They're actually where most of the accidents happen. So junction improvement, though it's not as attractive necessarily and is also more expensive to do, is actually where you need to put the money and the time. As well, you know, actually going between junctions is actually the safer bit of cycling, though it may not always feel that way.
So how would you like to see junctions improved in the Cambridge area? What would you like to see on them to make them more friendly for cyclists and obviously easier for car drivers to spot the cyclists as well?
Well, I mean, quite often we see that too many sort of motor vehicle lanes have been put in, crammed in at a junction, which is not really big enough to take them. And that results in cyclists being squeezed. And for instance, we've got one on Milton Road, Gilbert Road at the moment, where there is two lanes of traffic, and it's really quite dangerous. Well, it feels unsafe for the cyclists to actually go through that. So actually, many of them are actually cycling on the pavement, which we think that's a real problem. We don't like people cycling on the pavement.
We can get a fine for it, can't you?
Oh, you certainly can. Yes, and you know, it's wrong. The footway is where the pedestrians are, so we actually want to see provision made safe for cycling on the road. And so in the case of that junction, it's really great that the suggestion is to take one of those motor vehicle lanes out and make it into a wide cycle lane.
What's your thoughts on these segregated cycle lanes then? Do you think that's going to make things easier for cyclists and encourage more people to get out on their bikes rather than use four wheels?
Yes, I do. I think they're very important, especially for younger people and older people, the less confident cyclists. So, you know, in some countries, in Germany, for instance, 90% of secondary school children go to school on a bike. And in this country, not in Cambridge necessarily, but it's complete reverse. It might be 2%. So, you know, in a normal Western society where there's high levels of car ownership, it is entirely possible for almost all children to go to school on a bike in the secondary sector. And that obviously frees up parents to do other things. So, you know, it is good. Just go back to the junction side. One nice thing you can do at junctions is have pedestrians and cyclists all crossing at the same time. So you shut down the junction, we all cross, mingling together, and then the cars go, and that's quite a nice way of getting people across, rather than our system, which always has one cars flowing somewhere at some point.
You mentioned about children and the lack of children actually going to school using a cycle. Do you think schools should do more to encourage children to bike rather than getting their parents to take them to school in a car?
Absolutely. There are lots of benefits. Fitness for the child. They arrive at school feeling better. There's evidence to show that they perform better at school because exercise does actually make you feel good. And obviously it's good for the environment.
Makes them more independent as well.
Independence, they can go home. There's a really lovely
thing. Children actually want to cycle, yeah. Don't they?
You see children in Cambridge go home as a little group. They all go to their friend's house and go and have a whatever they do. And then, you know, they can do that spontaneously. There's no date. There's, you know, the parents. And also, if you children cycle school, it cuts down on congestion for other motorists who have to use a car. So, you know, there are so many benefits, and it cuts down on noise pollution. It cuts down on air pollution. You know, anyone who lives on a busy road would love to have less traffic. So, you know, there's...
But quite rightly, I mean, parents are concerned about that. And in fact, the quality of cycle training that's given at schools now has gone up markedly with the introduction of the bikeability schemes.
They used to call it cycling proficiency, I think, didn't they, many years ago?
I did one of those, I did one of those.
It was, yeah.
Yes, and my memory of cycling proficiency actually is cycling around a school playground, which doesn't teach you anything about the reality of cycling on the roads in our city. But bikeability has changed that. So although they start off briefly in the playground, once you've got those basic control skills, you're out on the road.
Something I've also discovered on your website is you're doing a lot of things around cycle parking and making sure there's availability for people to actually park bikes safely and securely without having to worry about them getting stolen.
You bet. Yeah, that is a big one. I mean, anyone who tries to park their bike at the railway station, have you tried to do that, John?
No, but it's a nightmare.
I think
and it's so bad for visitors. They come to Cambridge expecting this wonderful medieval city, and what they see is a pile of rotten bikes. And they also have to, you know, there's lots of bikes on the pavement going out of the station. And I have friends who comment on this, and it's such a bad advert for Cambridge. The station is a mess. I know they're going to change it, but why, you know, we shouldn't wait.
It has been a long time.
Yeah, it has been a long time.
I think it's, is it a year or two? Within a couple of years, anyway, we should have a 3,000... place cycle park at the railway station, which will triple the current capacity. We're not sure if that's enough.
That's right. I think that comes down to a lot of the time the cost of actually implementing the scheme and actually getting the racks put in. Although some people say it's inexpensive, I suppose the local authorities would say it is quite an expensive thing to do because they need to make sure it's all safe and passes the relevant health and safety inspections.
Absolutely.
And
well,
things.
I mean, the thing is, you can get 10 bikes into the space of one car, so it's actually much cheaper to actually create spaces for the commuters who want to travel to the station by bike than it is to cater for that same number of, you know, parking a ton of metal there for the whole day.
The other good news about the station is that the proposed Chisholm Trail, which is thanks to the council being given support, will lead all the way from the northern busway, essentially along, not quite along the route of this railway, but it'll cross the river, it'll then track the route of the railway approximately to the station, which will allow lots of people who live in the north of Cambridge to be able to get south towards the station with relative ease. And sometimes about things like you'll be able to go under Mill Road rather than across it, and you know, so it'll be good for kids. So it'll you know, you want to go to the leisure park, for instance, you want to go there without necessarily crossing a road.
You mentioned Mill Road there, and I quite often have to travel down Mill Road in a car, unfortunately, and there is obviously the ever-increasing number of cars vying for space with cyclists on the road, and it can be quite hair-raising, and I have seen a number of cyclists, unfortunately, come off their bikes on Mill Road, and obviously a lot of it is revolving around safety awareness for car drivers, but also safety awareness for cyclists as well, making sure you wear the protective equipment like helmets and things.
Well, we think helmets is a matter of personal choice, and the other side to helmets is there are two ways of improving safety. Obviously, one is this training of a cyclist or wearing high vis or helmet. But the other one is, which is actually more important, is for the driver to be aware, because they're the one who's doing the damage in almost all cases. So actually, what we want to do is get drivers. We want law-abiding.
Training is the key. Improving the safety of cycling, or it's one of the measures that you can use. But we've also seen recently the introduction of a 20-mile-an-hour limit on Mill Road, and in fact, the city is now forging ahead with that sort of a city-wide 20-mile-an-hour scheme. And that's the kind of scheme that should tackle that sort of problem. But you still do get the problem. In fact, I had it on the way here today of close overtaking of motor vehicles when you're going over that bridge. Because, you know, people are, I guess, impatient, and they need, you know, they've been held up, and they see a gap, and they try and take it. So it's a hard one to solve, actually, funnily enough.
Yes, indeed. And moving on with the interview, is obviously, well, time is vastly running out for us, and the Tour de France comes to Cambridge on the 7th of July. What was your thoughts when you heard the news that the Tour de France was going to be coming through our little city here?
Well, it's great for cycling. It's great for Cambridge that it's coming here. As I said earlier, you know, we've gone from a city that's banned cycling to actually one that's having the world's biggest annual sporting event coming through our streets.
And it says something about the reputation of Cambridge, actually, internationally. Yeah. That's what's key, is that Cambridge, you know, has the highest number of cyclists of any city in the UK. And, you know, they chose Cambridge for a reason, and that's because it is a cycling city. And we need to just go further with that and improve it and let people enjoy cycling to work. Is great because you can go door to door. You know, you don't have to park. You can park at the door. Not everyone, obviously, but, you know, it's potentially there.
It
can be quicker than going by car.
Can I just butt in and say, yes, the Tour de France is coming to Cambridge on 7/7, but on 5/5 we have the Reach Fair ride.
Of course, tell us more about that.
Yes, which is on Bank Holiday Monday. We've got, this is our annual bike ride, which goes from the centre of Cambridge out to the 800-year-old fair in the village of Reach, which is about 14 miles away on the route that we go. Last year we had an amazing 600 because we had such good weather. If we get that weather again, we could beat that, because when we've got the mayor and we've got the additional sort of promotion from the Tour de France. We've called it Le Reach Ride this year.
That's very exciting stuff. And if people want to find out more information about the Cambridge Cycling Campaign and your work and sort of upcoming events, where would you point them in the direction of?
Oh, well, you should go to www.camcycle.org.uk or just look for Cambridge Cycling Campaign online.
Simon Nuttall and John Hall speaking to me a couple of weeks ago. This is The Tour Is Coming, your local guide to the Tour de France and cycling opportunities locally. Still to come, we hear from Hugh Salt from Cambridge Dutch Bikes. In the meantime, let's have some music. Here's Queen. I've paid my dues. Welcome back to The Tour Is Coming on Cambridge 105. I'm Matt Webb. As part of the Tour de France's stage three leg in the city, Cambridge City Council have been encouraging cycling clubs, organisations, or in fact anyone with an interest in the sport, to stage legacy events or sportifs. One such event is being organised by Hugh Salt. He's the owner of Cambridge Dutch Bikes and the School Run Centre on Mill Road. Hugh has an extensive background in cycling and has owned Cambridge Dutch Bikes for many years, as he told me when I chatted with him on my afternoon show back in April.
Well, originally Cambridge Dutch Bikes started as exactly that. I went to an auction in Holland and bought about 300 bicycles and brought them over here, and we sold them in the course of 6 months. From that, I realised very quickly that people liked the Dutch bikes, and I actually put a website up as was the first person to sell Dutch bicycles online, which became quite a good, successful business. I very quickly saw that because of congestion problems, we're going to have to start cycling a lot more with our kids, and I then created the School Run Centre. And what we do there, we specialise in not only selling bikes that will carry children, but also giving advice to people, getting them to buy the right bike for what they need. We have a policy of lending a bike out sometimes for a couple of hours, sometimes for a day, 2 days, to make sure that what we're selling to that person is exactly what they need and does what they want it to do. And of course, the reaction is they come back the next day and the kids are going, oh, we don't want to give the bike back. You know, can we keep it now?
So I suppose it's also encouraging children to cycle as well. And the difference with a Dutch bike is it has three wheels.
Not all of them. I mean, we've got two and three wheels. We've got range of bikes that will take from two little children. We've actually got a recent import of Danish bikes that will take their three-wheelers. They will take two children, three at a squeeze. And we run right up to the bike that's outside now, which will take six children. It's got an electric assist. On the flat, you wouldn't need that, but it's obviously aimed a bit more at education projects. And we've got a couple of these running around down in Billericay. They use them for an education project, and you can imagine that the children can't wait to be picked up in this bicycle and taken off to the, it's called Norsey Woods. and they, you know, it's given them absolute ace when it comes to popularity.
Now, the one that you've parked outside our studio here has three wheels, and I had the fortune of actually being able to ride one last year for the Strawberry Fair when Cambridge 105 did the coverage of the Strawberry Fair parade, and I found them quite interesting to ride. A bit difficult to start off with, but when you get used to them, you can just flow along the road, I suppose.
Yes, I mean, it's a three-wheeler, so I have two-wheelers that will take children in a box on the front. And actually, at this moment, there is one has already been delivered for the purpose of carrying a lawnmower.
Crikey.
For winter comforts. They've got a contract for the council, and they're buying two bikes with dedicated boxes on the front, and will be doing small contracts for the council carrying these lawnmowers. 30 kilos, no problems at all.
You've touched upon Winter Comfort as one of the organisations and charities that's been involved with you. Do you do work with other charities?
I do. We work with Ruth at the All Ability Cycling. We try to work with all these organisations and help each other, because it's a big market out there. We're not in competition with these people. And whatever we can do to help them, we will, of course. Our customers are very lucky. If they do have special needs and abilities, they have VAT-free clause, so they don't pay VAT. And we will adapt stuff for special needs. If somebody needs it, we will make a bike for them.
And tell us a little bit of background with you and cycling. Where did it all start for you with getting on two wheels?
Probably in Romsey Road. No, we lived in St. Philip's Road when I was a child. And the first thing we had were little tiny bicycles that Grandad put together, didn't have much sort of brakes on them, and going down Vinery Road was quite a challenge to stop at the end. And roller skates, of course, that was the four wheels that we had on each feet. And then, yes, I mean, I've cycled all my life. I moved out to Grantchester when I was 10. There were no buses to speak of. If you wanted to go to the ABC Miners in town on a Saturday morning, the only way was to get on your bicycles and go there, pay your threepence and have your chips on the way home. I went to Impington, so I cycled from Grantchester across to Impington quite regularly to go to school. Again, it was easier than hanging about waiting for a bus. Apart from the really cold weather, I still did it in that weather.
I think most children do when they have to cycle to school and things like that.
Well, yes, they're being encouraged to get back that way. And of course, I moved to Holland in 1980, and it was like heaven for me. I could cycle to work, I could cycle everywhere. If I want to go out in the evening, I cycle, I get a taxi, I get a bus, I get a tram. The transport system is so good there, and it's integrated. You can do what's caught on here is you can get a train to a far corner of Holland and organise a bicycle for you, which means you don't have to mess about. You know that you're going to get there. A bit like the Boris bikes, but a bit more efficient, probably.
That's interesting you talk about Holland, because there was an interesting article in the Independent back in 2009 touching upon the bits that you've done in Holland. Tell us more about that.
Mainly, it's really the attitudes that are changing. I think, obviously, every car driver should be very pleased that there's somebody on a bicycle. I'm not a great fan of segregating bicycles from traffic. I think it's the same with pedestrians. You need to have respect for everybody. And if you segregate, you always get the chance that people become slightly alienated from their responsibility with each other.
You're talking about the Trumpington Road proposal?
Yeah. I mean, it can work. Obviously, like the cycleway along the guided busway, if it was twice as wide, I would be a fantastic fan of it. It's not quite wide enough, but it takes a route that you wouldn't normally otherwise be able to take. Again, when we were children, we got on our bikes and we went off on all the green lanes. It's still possible to do that, but as a general commuter route, I think what's being done well is identifying routes that are used a lot and actually improving these routes. Some of the time you can spend a lot of money, and if nobody's using that route, then it's not money that's really well spent.
That's right, some people would probably agree with you there. And tell us a little bit about this Tour de France legacy event that you're looking to stage in the coming months.
Well, together with Outspoken, the local bike couriers, and Black Bar Brewery, who very kindly does a lot of publicity because I very kindly lend him one of my big long bikes. He carries his beer and does a lot of stocking from the bike. I know in the summertime he's been doing it with the punt as well. So Joe there is very dedicated to alternative forms of transport. And we have now got here approved funding for an event on the 7th, which is the actual day of the Tour de France.
7th of July.
It will start from Parker's Peace and run out through Trumpington.
What does it involve doing?
So we're inviting everybody to come to Trumpington Recreation Ground, and what we'll do there is have cargo bike races, cargo bike tryouts. Hopefully we'll have some music. We'll get somebody to do a bit of music. And of course, you know, with the children carrying bikes, everybody can come and try a bike that they haven't tried before. And that's probably the thing that we do best, is to inspire people and show them what the possibilities are.
I mean, some people may have not been on a bike for the best part of 10, 20 years, and it could be quite a daunting thing getting back on two wheels again and driving around in a car.
Well, Outspoken run training courses for that. So there is a bike ability course in which you can go on their website and you can find where they will do sort of courses to get you back on a bike. And obviously, since we were children, conditions have changed a lot. So you really do need to be aware of what's going on the roads and have skill. It's, you know, getting back on the bike after 50 years is not a good idea unless you're particularly fit and are particularly aware of what happened in those 50 years.
That's understandable. And the Fringe event, how long has it taken you to organise it?
We started a couple of months ago. At the moment, it's all very loosely stuck together. We've got funding, which means we can have marshals and we can ensure that whatever public arrive there, arrive safely. And hopefully we'll be going to be doing races with cargo bikes, with families. We'll have obviously different classes of vehicles. I think it will involve picking up packages, dropping packages, a bit like a relay race, and then on a 400-metre course. And that's, I think that's going to be great fun. If we can have a bit of food and music around it, it will seal the event a bit. And, of course, the Tour de France peloton will come past through Trumpington. So we're directly on the route.
All sounds very exciting. And turn your attention sort of to the Tour de France in a bit more detail. When you first heard the news, when you watched the television or heard the radio that the Tour de France was coming to Cambridge, what was your first reaction?
I thought, good, good, good. You know, for every cyclist out there, this is good. Whether you are a campaigning cyclist, whether you're just a passive cyclist who goes to work on his bike and doesn't really care what other people do, it's all good because it raises the profile of cycling. It will obviously bring a lot of money to Cambridge. It makes you realise how many people out there may not even cycle, but are great fans of the sport. I mean, it's still it's the biggest sport event in the world, and it gets more coverage than just about anything else on this planet. We're very lucky that it has come to England and to Cambridge.
And of course, the success of British cycling over the years, not just in the Olympics, but at the Tour de France and the World Championships, certainly has helped boost the profile.
Yeah, well, Sir Bradley Wiggins, that's the prime man we have to look at. There are some Brits in the past who haven't always done that well in it. I mean, Tommy Simpson died on the course, but debatable why. It's a very, very, very tough race. It's not an easy race, of course. We're very lucky in this bit of it. It's all pretty flat between here and London. You can imagine going up some of those peaks in France is punishing. It's life-threatening that you must know when you're not needing to cycle anymore, when you need to get off and go, wow.
That's right, and it's always important to remember they have the cyclists have a support team following on behind them in cars, where they don't just change the wheels, but they also help out if the cyclist has any problems on the route too.
Yes, I gather that with the whole thing needs at least 5,000 rooms every night to accommodate everybody who's involved.
That's a lot of people.
It is, isn't it? I think for people who are non-cyclists and who are even anti-cyclists, it's going to show them that the mood is for cycling. If you go out in Holland and Belgium at the weekends, you will see hundreds of people on their bikes on a Sunday, and not just in Lycra, going to the coast, going here and there. And I think, you know, if we're to solve anything to do with congestion, then we've got to get this attitude. And of course, it's nice while the sun shines.
Well, that's right. It's not too bad when the weather's like this, but when it's a bit wet outside, that tends to cause people to sort of take to their cars rather than don on some waterproofs and actually use their bike.
Well, certainly on the school run, and all of the bigger bikes I have waterproof covers. So it's probably one of the reasons why you won't see people cycling so much with two children on a bike, on a normal bike, whereas they will be carrying three or four in one of the cargo bikes, because they're nicely tucked away in a really waterproof cover. And winter times you see them steaming because they've all put hot water bottles and wheaty bags in there to keep their kids warm. And of course the kids love it. You know, given the choice, they don't want to get back in their vehicle and be alienated. They love being in contact with the street. It's that sort of contact, and they see other friends on the way on their cargo bikes. It becomes quite a clan thing in a way.
And just to bring things to a conclusion, so your Fringe event is taking place on the 7th of July, the actual day of the Tour de France. Where's it taking place again?
That'll be our Trumpington Recreation Ground, probably starting, I imagine we'll start 10:30 in the morning, that sort of time. It will be an all-day event. Hopefully we will get up on the websites. I mean, at the moment, you can go to Cambridge Government website. You can go to the different Cambridge sites and find, if you just Google the third stage, we're actually the third stage. The other two stages already started. You'll get lots of info, and we should be up on all of those sites. But certainly on the dutchbike.co.uk and schoolruncentre.co.uk and the Outspoken, and on Black Bar Brewery, we will hope by next month or so to have complete information up.
Hugh Salt from Cambridge Dutch Bikes and the School Run Centre, talking about a legacy event he's staging and his businesses. Something the riders will be thinking when taking part in the tour will be victory and being crowned champion. With this in mind, there's a whole host of songs that I could choose to relate to, but this one I've picked out is probably the most fitting. ABBA and The Winner Takes It All.
La Tour is coming.
This is Cambridge 105, community radio in your city. You're listening to La Tour is Coming with me, Matt Webb, and you'll look ahead to the world's biggest annual sporting events appearance in the city, plus cycling activities locally. Over 100,000 people are expected to pack Cambridge's streets to catch a glimpse of the Stage 3 leg of La Tour in July. Cambridge City Council are urging you to plan your journey in advance so you're best prepared for any disruption you may face. If you run a local business, you're being advised to make contingency plans if staff are unable to get in. Neil Jones from Cambridge City Council gave us an update last week.
It's going very well. It's been a developing picture, and we've been making, you know, kind of last minute changes, but it's now pretty much locked down. All the road closures are now in place. The timings of those road closures are agreed. We also have information about what's happening to the car parks, what's happening to the buses as well. All the information, although I'm from the City Council, the key information on transport is on the County Council's website, which is cambridgeshire.gov.uk/latourstage3.
And you're asking members of the public, local residents and businesses to plan ahead as well?
Yeah, we've got a dual message with the Tour de France. I mean, first of all, to say, you know, we want to celebrate the fact it's coming. The biggest annual sporting event in the world is coming to our city at no cost to council taxpayers, which is a fantastic thing. With that comes disruption. Our key message at the moment is for people to be aware of how the road closures, how the transport is going to affect them on the day. If you're a resident that normally comes in shopping, you'll need to plan ahead. If you need to get to work on that day, if you're a business that has staff who need to get to work that day, if you're a business that has deliveries that would normally happen on a Monday, please do plan ahead. Have a look at the road closure information and just start to be aware.
As Neil touched upon, there's going to be a number of road closures on the day. This is the way things are currently looking. On Sunday the 6th of July, the day before the event, a number of routes will be shutting early. These are Gonville Place and Parkside, which will shut from 5:30. Meanwhile, on race day itself, a large chunk of roads will be closed from 4 a.m, and these are Regent Street, St Andrew Street, Sydney Street, Bridge Street, Trinity Street, King's Parade, Silver Street, Trumpington Street, Short Street, Park Terrace, Parker Street, Emmanuel Street, Victoria Avenue, Jesus Lane, Drummer Street, Emmanuel Street and Lentzfield Road. Finally, Trumpington Road and the A1301 will be closing from 7 a.m. on the 7th of July. Most roads will then start reopening in phases from 3 p.m. after the race has left the city. For a full list of road closures and details about disruption to public transport on the day, go to cambridgeshire.gov.uk/latourstage3. That website again, cambridgeshire.gov.uk/latourstage3.
La Tour is coming.
Now, when it comes to recording your cycle journeys, how do you do it? Perhaps it's in your diary, on a piece of paper, or even on your smartphone. Well, there's now a website that can help record your cycling travels and compare your times against others locally, all in one place. It's part of the Love to Ride Cambridgeshire website, which is action-packed with rider-related materials. Sam Robinson from the site tells us more.
We're actually a global website. We're all about getting more people cycling. We've been working in the UK now for the last 8 years, and we've delivered over 105 programmes all around the country, and also a little bit of work in Australia and New Zealand, which is good.
So you're here, there and everywhere, basically.
Personally, unfortunately, I'm not in New Zealand and Australia, but certainly the company has a bit of a footprint over there as well, which is great. So our mission's plain and simple. It's just about getting people to understand the real benefits of cycling and sharing the love for cycling as widely as possible.
Absolutely. And tell us a little bit about the website, because it enables us to record our cycle journeys of all things.
That's right, absolutely. So we've been engaged with Cambridge now for several years, and the last programme we completed with them was actually in last year. But Love to Ride as a web platform, it actually rolls on, which is great. Brings a real bit of extra value there to any of the regions in the UK that we're working in. So anyone can go on to lovetoride.net and they can log in, they can register, they can log their trip, set goals. We've got some really fun ways to engage people through this virtual ride concept, which is quite new, but a really good way to get people to find out a little bit about the Land's End to John O'Groats route, not actually riding it. And essentially, it's also somewhere where people can find out local information about where to ride. So if you're new to cycling, how about trying out these routes? Or have you thought about, you know, cycling through the park if you're a bit wobbly on the roads, for instance? Or, you know, so it's a great site. We're just actually about to relaunch the site with our new Love to Ride branding, which is being rolled out this week and next month. So the site's going to change soon. So for anyone who jots down that URL, lovetoride.net, goes on and registers today, within a couple of weeks, it's actually all going to change, but it's all for the better.
I suppose one of your main aims is to encourage more people to use two wheels rather than four and actually get out and use their bicycles.
Well, that's right. I mean, anyone who's living in or around Cambridge will know that there are a huge number of cyclists in Cambridge. I'm living in Bristol now, but I did actually live in Cambridge for 5 years back in the late 90s. And, I've always been a cyclist, and Cambridge has always struck me as one of you know, the best places for cycling in some ways. It's obviously has some issues as well, but, you know, it's a great place for cycling. It's very flat. People can get around quickly. It's a fairly compact town. And absolutely, you're right, Matt, in saying that what we're trying to do is encourage people to think about how they get from A to B, whether that's dropping the kids at school, going to local shops, you know, or even getting into work, or potentially even going around on the weekend. You know, maybe that 2-3 1-mile car journey can be done by bike or even on foot, but certainly by bike.
That's right. And I suppose one of the also important things is it enables people to compare their cycling times with other people and other residents.
That's right, exactly. So there's all sorts of opportunities to do that. We've got a smartphone app that's available for the Android and the iPhone. And if you go onto the lovetoride.net, you'll be able to find how to download that. That's a great way for people who are keen to be able to track their miles and log their trips using their smartphone and GPS tracking. It's a very simple way for people to engage with us. And obviously, you know, a lot of people have smartphones these days. It's a great way to get them to take part. And, you know, when you log your trip, it also goes through, obviously, to a main database where we're collecting all this information. And, you know, actually over the last couple of years, cyclists in Cambridge have cycled more than 15 times around the world through our website alone. And obviously there's a lot of people who aren't engaging with us and are cycling anyway. So it's these sort of figures that we're keen to show. And it's also about, you know, getting your friend, getting your colleague, your mum, your dad, your auntie, your niece, your nephew to think about doing this as well. So a lot of the new functionality we've built into the site that's launching next month is all about using social media to share the benefits of cycling. So when you've been to the shops, Matt, and it took you half as long because you did it on your bike, it's really easy for you to send a little tweet or maybe a little Facebook message out that can be picked up by your followers so they can also understand how that's impacted you and how it could impact them. So it's really about, you know, sharing the message.
That's absolutely right. And tell us a little bit about the virtual online ride for someone who hasn't actually seen it before, because it seems quite interesting and quite an innovative thing to do.
Yeah, it is. That's absolutely right. It's a really nice little feature, actually. And if anyone goes on to the... If, by the way, if you live in Cambridgeshire and you go on to lovetoride.net, put in your postcode when you register, it'll pick up the Cambridgeshire site automatically. And what you'll see, and there's a little tab in the top right that says virtual ride. And if you click on that, It's a great feature. We actually launched virtual rides about 3 years ago, and we're developing a new one for the, I don't know if you know, but the Tour de France this year, I'm sure you do know, is starting in Yorkshire and going down through Cambridge, of course, and actually into London. But what we're developing right now, Matt, is a Tour de France virtual ride that's going to be doing the Grand Départ, the first three stages of the Tour de France that are happening in the UK. It's about 310 miles in total. And anyone, as of the next couple of weeks, especially in Cambridge, because it's one of the start locations in the third stage, they'll be able to actually take part in a Tour de France virtual ride. So if you log your shop trips or your commuting trips, you'll be going on the journey on the first three stages, and you'll be able to find out information about where that route's going, little snippets of local fun information, and also some sort of safety information under bits and pieces as well. So it's a great engagement tool, and you can invite up to 10 friends or family to either take part with you as a team to do that, or you can race them. Much more fun.
It all sounds very, very fascinating. And of course, as you touched upon, the Tour de France is coming to Cambridge and the UK this year. What was your reaction when you first found out that the Tour de France was visiting the UK? Because it's a massive thing to happen in the world of cycling, and especially for British cycling.
Yeah, well, it's great. I mean, it has happened before. You know, we saw the Giro d'Italia as well take place in Ireland at the moment, you know, which is excellent. You know, it's a really good way to engage people. And actually, of course, that pro cycling circuit is relatively elite. You know, I've seen the Tour de France a couple of times, and it literally does whiz by. The peloton whizzes by within 3 or 4 seconds, followed by about 400 cars and all sorts of merchandising. But it's fantastic. It's great for cycling. There's going to be a real buzz in the UK. Obviously, it's going to be a massive buzz in Cambridge. We're working with Transport for London now to develop a London Cycle Challenge that's going to be taking that theme of the Grand Départ and actually making the most of it. But it's all about, you know, giving people the opportunity to engage. And if something like the Tour de France excites them, then we can grab them as well. And we can say, hey, look, log your trips, set those goals, go on a virtual ride, and then we can accumulate those statistics and show how well people in Cambridge are doing to get on their bikes.
That's absolutely right. And thank you very much for joining us on the line, Sam. That was Sam Robinson from Love to Ride Cambridgeshire. And when does the new website go live?
Okay, so all the new website's going to be updated during next month, so probably towards the end of next month. But as I said, anyone can go on to Love to Ride, all lowercase letters, lovetoride.net / Cambridgeshire, or just put your postcode into the search box. It'll pull up that website and away you go. We're just bringing on 3 or 4 global promotions onto the Love to Ride site, all of our Love to Ride sites around the world, which are going to include big giveaways of huge bike gear prizes and new bikes and all sorts of stuff. So there's another incentive if people need incentives to get on a bike. This is all about making it fun, making it easy, and making it accessible.
Sam Robinson from the website Love to Ride Cambridgeshire. This is La Tour is Coming on Cambridge 105. Still to come, we hear from the broadcaster Mark Goodyear about 2 charity cycle rides he's taken part in. But continuing our theme of victory songs, how about this now from Heather Small? This is Proud.
La Tour is Coming.
The excellent Heather Small and Proud here on Cambridge 105. This is The Tour is Coming with me, Matt Webb. I'm keeping you company through until 6 o'clock this evening, 17 minutes past 5 now. And I'm pleased to say that joining us in the studio to talk about all things cycling, because there's lots of cycling events happening at the moment, is 105 Sports' Chris Jordan. Good afternoon to you.
Afternoon, Matt. It's nice to be sat this side of a desk on a Saturday afternoon.
I'm sure it is. You're normally doing the gubbins on this side, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right. We'll be doing it tomorrow instead, the 105 Sports show, just because of the Premier League finishing tomorrow. So, Yeah, so I just get to just hang around for a bit, chat about my favourite subject.
And which is, of course, cycling.
Absolutely.
And turning your attention now to the Giro d'Italia, it's only the 11th time the race has actually started outside Italy.
Yeah, that's right. It started in Denmark a couple of years ago, and then they've been alternating recently. So 1 year it'll just be fully within Italy, and the next year they'll do 2 or 3 days in another country and then get over to Italy for the remainder of it. So, 3 days in Ireland. So 2 days in Northern Ireland have just come to an end, and tomorrow there'll be kind of symbolic border crossing and then finishing stage in Dublin, and then a rest day on Monday before they start things off in Italy on Tuesday morning.
Absolutely, and it's not been a very good couple of days for Ireland's Dan Martin, because he crashed in the opening time trial stage in Belfast, breaking his collarbone, meaning he'll miss the rest of the Giro d'Italia. The unfortunate thing was he also took out several teammates in the process.
Yeah, well, it was a team time trial yesterday, so obviously the whole team are riding together. He was about halfway down the line in a team of nine. I think he just hit a manhole cover or something.
And he did,
yes. Obviously it was raining, so it was very slippy. He went over, and obviously the four guys literally right behind him getting his slipstream, and they all just fell down like dominoes. And so he's out, which is just really so sad, because he's... obviously, it's the first time a Grand Tour's been, you know, starting in his home country. He didn't even get to Dublin. It was only the third day when it was going to Ireland, and he didn't even get there. And not only that, but he was a genuine contender for a top six finish. You know, he's one of the top riders in the race. He won Catalunya last year. He won the stage of the Tour de France last year. He won Liège-Bastogne-Liège, which is one of the big one-day races last year as well. And this year, he just dedicated all his training. Everything that he'd done was geared towards the Giro and doing well in the Giro. And then literally 5 minutes into it, and he's broken his collarbone, he's out of the race. So it's just really sad.
And he's going to be watching it as a spectator now, which is, as you say, very unfortunate. And looking at some of the pre-race favourites from yesterday, former Tour de France winner Australia's Cadel Evans was one of the big contenders.
Yeah, Evans Evans' team had a good team time trial. It's a bit of a weird day because the rain was on and off. The first couple of teams out had fairly dry conditions, then it rained, and then it kind of dried up again towards the end. So there are a couple of teams like Movistar for Nairo Quintana who lost a little bit of time, which you wouldn't really have expected, but they just got the worst of the conditions, really. Whereas Cadel Evans' his BMC team got pretty decent conditions and rode a good time trial. I think they came second or third. So he's in a decent position, and maybe he's gained 20-30 seconds on Quintana and Rodriguez. Those three are the three that people are kind of talking about as the main contenders, although there are a couple of others bubbling under that might have a say in that as well.
And the Canadians are doing quite well as well at the moment. You've got Sven Tuft, for example.
Yeah, well, Canada won it 2 years ago. It's kind of out of the blue, really. I won quite a lot of money on it because it was quite long odds to Ryder Heyerdahl that year. He's in Dan Martin's team, so he'll now take over the leadership of that team with Dan Martin out. But Sven Tuft riding for the Australian Orica Green Edge team, who are specialists in the team time trial. They were fully expected to win yesterday, and they won by about 5 seconds. And it was his birthday. So they engineered it so that he would be the guy in the lead of the team as they crossed the line, which would mean that he would have the leader's jersey, the Maglia Rosa, when all was said and done at the end of the day. So yeah, that's great news for Canadian cycling. That apart from Heyerdahl's one-off Giro win, they've not had a great deal of success in that country.
You touched upon the jersey. It's pink, isn't it, of all colours?
That's right. Yeah. So in Tour de France, everyone knows it's the yellow jersey, but people aren't maybe quite so familiar with the Giro. It's always been pink, always been the Maglia Rosa, in the Tour of Spain, the Vuelta a España later in the year, it's red. So a lot of the marketing and all of it is geared around the fact that the pink jersey is the big prize that they're all after. So you'll have seen on the TV loads of people wearing pink, there were like telegraph poles and power things painted pink, and like buildings painted pink, and there were like loads of sheep running around whose wool had been dyed pink, and it was just crazy scenes on the TV. Pink jersey, which today was on the shoulders of Sven Tuft, although you couldn't really see it under the under their rain jackets. You could hardly tell who was who because they were decked out with so much protective clothing for the weather.
That's right. Were you surprised by Sven Tuft's sort of total it took him to get round the course? It was 24 minutes and 42 seconds. That's actually quite quick.
Yeah, well, it's because it was a team time trial rather than an individual one. They're kind of working together as a team of nine, and they can really push a much faster time because you can have someone on the front for about a kilometre and then they just kind of veer off and the next guy comes through. And it's amazing how much of a difference being in the slipstream of someone makes to the amount of energy you're expending. It's probably about 20% energy that you save from not being on the front. So, if he was on his own, he wouldn't have done it in anywhere near that time. But as part of the team, they really nailed it. And it's a really technical discipline, the team time trial. There's some teams kind of do a lot more work on it than others. It's not just about whether you've got the best riders. It's about the tactics and training, picking the right lines and working out who your strongest riders are and who should stay on the front for the longest and all this kind of thing.
And that's down to the team bosses who make the decisions there. I mean, some of the riders can ignore it and go off on their own tangent, but obviously they're advised not to by their team managers who follow on in the cars behind the actual riders.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, again, the team time trial is a little bit different. I don't think there's a team time trial in the Tour this year. I'm pretty sure there isn't, actually. Someone will ring in and correct me if I'm wrong. But in the team time trial, that it won't, like, doing anything other than staying as part of the team won't benefit them at all, but certainly on the individual stages. And I was reading a fascinating story about when Stephen Roach won the Giro d'Italia in May in 1987, when his team leader was, his nominal team leader was this Italian rider, and Roach attacked, and his director sportif, the kind of head of the team, was in the car telling him to drop back, and he was refusing to do so, and in the end his own team were chasing him and working against him, and he got a lot of jip from the Italian fans then, although he went on to win the Giro and always kind of semi-forgiven, I think, by the end of it.
So moving on to stage two, or the second stage, it's moved on to the north coast of Northern Ireland, hasn't it?
That's right, yeah. Well, it's kind of started and finished in Belfast, or started in Armagh, I think, and finished in Belfast, but it went up to the north coast, and then the second half of the race today just worked itself all the way back down along the northeast coast of Northern Ireland. So some stunning scenery. I was watching. I was going to go over to Baldock and watch the women's tour go through, but the weather forecast was really bad, so I decided to stay at home and watch the Giro instead. And then it didn't rain. I could have gone.
But you didn't regret watching it, because it was a fascinating race.
It was really good. There was a four-man breakaway, which is exactly what you'd expect on a stage like this. A fairly small breakaway, riders from teams that don't have an overall contender, just trying to make something happen and get their sponsor name out there on the TV, and a guy called Martin Schillinge, who's a veteran Dutch rider for the Belkin team. He took the King of the Mountains jersey, which is blue jersey, I think, in the Giro. Yeah, it's blue jersey. In the Tour de France, that's the polka dot jersey, the famous red and white polka dot jersey. But that was the only real thing to be decided, the breakaway. The main peloton kept them in check, kept them at about 5 minutes gap, and then in the last 50 kilometres started to reel them in, caught them with about 5 kilometres to go, and it was all set up nicely for a big sprint. I was really worried there was going to be some kind of big crash with the wet weather, but they managed it very well. And in the end, Marcel Kittel, the German sprinter, who many people remember from the Tour last year because he won four stages of the Tour de France last year and kind of got one over on Mark Cavendish a few times, he won the stage today, and then Michael Matthews, the Australian, who I think he finished about 7th or 8th today, but he was the best placed rider of the Orica Green Edge team, so that meant he actually moved up and took the Malia Rosa from Sven Tuft. So Michael Matthews is the new leader, although that probably won't last more than, well, he might keep it for a couple of days, a couple of flat stages, and then stage 5 might be a bit trickier for him.
Yeah, the honeymoon period won't last very long with regards to that. And once to watch for you rider-wise for the Giro d'Italia?
Like I say, for the overall, I think you're looking at Quintana and Rodriguez personally. A lot of people are saying Cadel Evans looks good. I have reservations over his form for a three-week tour, but it was only 3 years ago when he won the Tour de France. You shouldn't write him off. And a guy called Domenico Pozzovivo, who's I think he may be 30 now, he's kind of getting, he should be in about the prime of his form, and he's been climbing really well this year. I think he might kind of be an outside bet for top three as well. We did a much more detailed preview podcast of the Giro d'Italia, which you can get on the Cambridge 105 website if you're interested, by the way. They're the main guys. And like I say, in the podcast, we were saying Dan Martin as well, but sadly that's no longer going to be the case.
That's right, and we'll see what happens with the rest of the Giro d'Italia in the coming days. Moving on to the Women's Tour of Britain, and what can we say about Laura Trott? She crashed out yesterday in the third stage from Felixstowe to Clacton. Today she confirmed that she was fit and she took part.
Yeah, that was nice as well, and especially because her sister Emma has announced recently she's retiring after tomorrow. She's retiring from the sport, and today they were racing on their home kind of turf. The stage started today in Cheshunt, which is where both of them are from, where you'll remember the golden post boxes was painted when Laura Trott won their gold medal in the Olympics. She won two, actually, didn't she? But the stage today, I mean, Laura Trott isn't really riding it as the leader for Wiggle Honda. She's there's a lady called Georgia Bronzini who's a very good rider as well, and Trott was mainly riding for her today, and she actually got second, but no one can touch Marianne Vos. And you know, you'll hear people describe Marianne Vos as, you know, the best female cyclist. You'll hear people describe her as the best cyclist, full stop. And then you'll hear people describe her as the best sports person in world sport at the moment. I mean, she's seriously incredibly dominant and such a you know, such a nice person as well, and always comes across really well in interviews. And she won the stage today to increase her overall lead. So Marianne Vos leads it overall from Emma Johansson, who's a Swedish rider who's been really successful over the last couple of years as well. But it's just so great, the fans, there's been so many people out watching, and it makes you think, if that's how many people turn out for the Women's Tour of Britain, then how many people are going to turn out for the Tour de France in down the road in a couple of months' time? It's going to be really, I just can't imagine how many people are going to be in Cambridge.
I think as I said about an hour ago, actually, it's about over 100,000 people are expected to pack the streets of Cambridge. And we'll move along to the Tour de France in just a second. But Marianne Vos, and we've been talking about her. She's very tactical. She is. If you actually listen to some of her interviews, she plans the race, and she goes and has a look, and she's very she's very prim and proper about what she wants to do and what she wants to achieve.
She is incredibly clever racer. It's probably, I guess you could say that it's a bit easier to get the tactics right when you're also the strongest rider in the race. And, you know, to a certain extent, I mean, you know, she's not that much further ahead of the others, but she is just slightly better than everyone else. So if, you know, you almost kind of think she could probably, like, win a race two or three different ways, you know, but she you know, I think the impressive thing is that when you are the strongest rider in a race, that means that all the other teams are trying to beat you and trying to find a way of beating you, and still she manages to come up with the goods. She's not really been riding the World Cup Series this year, so that's been between Armitstead and Johansson, really. But this has kind of been her first big race, and it's great to see her in these rows. And I think, you know, that's the other thing about the Women's Tour this year. It's a new race, and five stages. It's all been around this kind of area, really, Hertfordshire and East Anglia. But I think hopefully in years to come, it'll expand out across the country a bit more. And you've got just all of the top women riders are here. You know, Annemiek van Vleuten's here, Vos, Johansson, Trott and Danny King. And Emma Pooley was on the attack a lot today. She's former Olympic silver medalist. Just all of the top riders in women's racing are here. And that just shows that it's seen as a really high profile race, and it's a good opportunity it's a really good opportunity actually for British cycling to kind of take advantage of that and make the Women's Tour the kind of primary week-long event in women's road racing.
That's right. I mean, a few moments ago you touched upon Lizzie Armistead, obviously the Olympic silver medalist. She finished in seventh yesterday, and I believe up until last night she was currently fifth in the overall standings. Do you see her as a big contender for the later stages?
Well, there's just one more stage to go now. That's tomorrow, and it finishes in Bury St Edmunds, incidentally. So it's only half an hour down the road. If you guys want to head over there and watch, it'll probably be rolling into Bury. Well, they'll be getting there probably around 2-ish. So you want to get into Bury for kind of midday at the latest and soak it up. I certainly recommend cycling over there. Unfortunately, I've got a radio show to do tomorrow. Otherwise, I'll be over there myself. But Vos leads Johansson for 19 seconds. Rosella Ratto, the Italian racer, is third, and then Lizzie is fourth. So she's 8 seconds off third, 30 seconds off the overall lead. She'd have an outside chance of third. I haven't seen the profile of the kind of end of the stage tomorrow. I suspect it's fairly flat in the, you know, in the Fens in East Anglia. So I doubt that there's going to be an opportunity to gain that much time. So I'd expect the top three to stay as they are, Voss Johansson and Ratto. But I think that'll be the next step for this race if it does, you know, the turnout's been so good. I think there is the end kind of conclusion is going to be that it's been really successful. Maybe next time they'll look at kind of having some more challenging terrain and taking it elsewhere in the country where there's some more hills and some chances of a bigger selection rather than the whole bunch finishing at the same time each week.
That's right. And of course, on the 7th of July, it's our turn because we stage the start of Stage 3 of the Tour de France. Of course, UK-wise, Stages 1 and 2 take place in Yorkshire, then it makes its way down to Cambridge for Stage 3. We'll go on to the fact that you're going to be a marshal for the event in just a second, but because we're running out of time, we'll look at some of the Tour de France contenders, and starting with Chris Froome, last year's winner. He's had an excellent start to his season this year, winning the Tour de Romandie for the second year in a row after being triumphant in the Stage 5 time trial. He's in excellent form this year.
Yeah, he won Oman in February and then he got a bit ill and he dropped out of a couple of races. And so Romandie is the first race he'd ridden in a while. You weren't really sure what kind of form he was going to be in. And on the big mountain stage, he put in an attack at the bottom of the last climb and no one could stay with him. And then he actually waited for Simon Spilak just so that he had someone to help him out on the last 20k of the ride. But him and Spilak ended up about a minute clear of anyone else that day, and it's really good signs for him. He'll be very happy just that things are progressing in the right direction, because Froome, as he did last year, would just gear his whole season towards making sure he's fully prepared for the Tour de France, and any wins that come along in the build-up are a bonus. He'll ride presumably the Criterium Dauphiné in June, which will be his next race, and then on to the Tour in July. But yeah, he's looking absolutely spot on.
I suppose next is Bradley Wiggins. He's taking part in the Tour of California. I think that's on Tuesday, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a really good race, actually, the Tour of California. They're really getting into their cycling over there. So it's an 8-day race, starts on Tuesday. It's always around this time, the same time as the Giro, so everyone's kind of into cycling and watching it and getting excited about it. People that don't want to race a 3-week tour because they don't want to tire themselves out too much before the Tour de France are more likely to race California. So there's lots of big names over in California this month: Cavendish, Peter Sagan as well, and Bradley Wiggins, as you say. And Bradley Wiggins is, I don't know, he seems to be kind of trying to become a bit of a better known celebrity over there. He's really, it's one of his main objectives for the season. It's one of those races with quite a big long time trial, so it is the kind of race that's suited to him and give him half a chance of winning.
That's right. And for someone who wasn't media trained many years ago, he certainly is now with all the with all the hype around him, and obviously even getting his knighthood. And finally, obviously, Mark Cavendish, poor old Cav, he's had a travelled few years, not getting the results he really wanted or deserved. Do you see him as a front runner for this year's Tour de France? Because we were talking off air, I think it was yesterday or the day before, and you said that he could possibly be the leader if it all goes well for the start of Stage 3.
Yeah, and I think certainly Cavendish, I mean, he's done well. I think last year that the main thing really was that he rode the Giro start to finish, and that just, like, I think that in hindsight took it out of him a bit. He wasn't quite as fresh for the Tour as he would have liked to be. This year his sole priority is the Tour. Stage 2, I think, finishes in his mum's hometown. You know, it's such a big deal for him. He'll probably break his collarbone on Stage 1 now, knowing what happened to Dan Martin yesterday. But, you know, theoretically, it's Stage 1 should be a sprint finish, which means he'd have the chance of taking the yellow jersey, which he's never had in the Tour de France. So that'd be another thing to add to his list of achievements, his palmarès. And then if he could stay and keep the jersey Stage 2, we might see Cavendish in yellow on Parker's Piece on the 7th of July, which would be fantastic. But I think I have a sneaky suspicion that Stage 2 up in Yorkshire is going to be a little bit more tricky than some people think. There's quite a few short, sharp, steep hills that might cause riders some problems.
Absolutely. And finally, you're going to be a marshal for the Cambridge stage of the Tour de France. Tell us very briefly about that.
Very briefly, I mean, I'm just going to be a marshal. It's it's the biggest UK volunteer program since the Olympics, obviously, in 2012. I don't yet know what I'm going to be doing yet, so I could be standing on a traffic island waving a flag and trying to stop riders from cycling into the obstructions, or I might be someone that's hanging around on Parker's Piece telling people where the toilets are and stuff like that. But it's just, you know, there's so many people that have volunteered to try and help out. Such a big event, such a unique thing for Cambridge. The Tour de France is never going to come here again. It's great that so many people have volunteered, and we're all going down for some big orientation thing in London in a couple of weeks' time, where I'll find out a bit more about it.
Behind the scenes gossip and
absolutely
things.
Yeah. So I'll hopefully get some behind the scenes info for you in a couple of weeks. But you get your own umbrella, you get your own tour maker umbrella. That's the main thing.
Is that the only thing you get? Was the
no, think you get quite a lot.
I was about to say,
a whole uniform and a cap and a backpack and stuff. But the brolly's what I was most happy about, because I'm always losing them.
You're not going to go and flog it on eBay afterwards, are you?
Yeah, it's like the Olympic torch, though.
Well, wonderful stuff. It's been interesting catching up with you, with you, Chris. And you were mentioning when we were talking about the Giro d'Italia that you've got a podcast about that.
Yeah, well, in general, we're doing a lot more podcasting for now the 105 Sport team, and also starting writing some blogs which go up on the website as well. The best thing to do is just follow at 105 Sport on Twitter, and you'll get all the latest information of what we've been up to. And obviously, we've got the show 4 till 6 tomorrow.
Wonderful stuff, Chris. Thank you very much for joining me on The Tour is Coming on Cambridge 105. This is The Tour is Coming on Cambridge 105, giving you an insight into what's happening locally ahead of the event Stage 3 race in Cambridge on the 7th of July. There's lots of legacy and fundraising events happening across the county to mark the tour in Cambridge. A number of charities are also marking the occasion and are staging their own riding events. Buffy Playbus provides preschool children with an opportunity to play, socialise and have fun in comfortable and safe surroundings. They're holding the Tour to Buffy in Saffron Walden on Sunday the 22nd of June, as Rosie Joel from the charity tells us.
Buffy Playbus was started in 1994, and it was started by a midwife who was going out into the community of Uttlesford, which is in northwest Essex. And she was visiting mums, and she thought that some of the mums were feeling isolated, whether it was because they lived in very rural communities or they were feeling financially isolated. And so she decided to set up a play bus. So she gathered together a group of mums, and we raised about £18,000 back in 1994. And she was able to go out and buy a second-hand double-decker bus and equip it with all sorts of play equipment. And that was the start of Buffy Playbus.
It all sounds very exciting, actually. And I noticed on your website that it says that it gives an opportunity for children to play, socialise and have fun in a comfortable and safe surrounding.
Yes, it does very much so. On two floors, we've got all sorts of craft activities on the lower deck. And we've got sand pits, and we've also got an onboard loo. And then upstairs, we've got a dressing up area, story corner, a ball pond, a kitchen area. So the children can have lots of fun playing with, you know, all those sort of toys. And we try and equip it with the best quality toys, which perhaps, you know, some children wouldn't have at home. So we get about 200 families who come to the bus on a regular basis, and we ask for a small donation of £2 for a child to come to the bus and £1 for any additional children.
That's a very reasonable sort of amount of money that people actually have to hand over. It's very, very small. But I was having a look on your website also, and you've been very successful in getting a community's big lottery fund grant of £164,774. So very good congratulations with that.
Thank you very much. Well, yes, we were so delighted because it's been a lifeline to our charity. Unfortunately, the £164,000 doesn't come all at once. It comes in small drops, tranches, every quarter of the year. So it just keeps us, with our heads above water. But it does mean that we've got to raise an awful lot of other funds from other sources.
Absolutely, and that leads me quite nicely onto the Tour de Buffy event that you're staging.
Right, well, now I'm going to hand you over to one of my colleagues, Catherine Fensmith, who's going to speak to you about the tour.
Yes, the Tour de Buffy event, it is exciting. It's a sportive. It's not actually a race, it's a sportive, and we've got, it's starting at Great Chesterford Community Centre on Sunday the 22nd of June. There's going to be a 50-mile sportive for, we would say, experienced cyclists, and that starts at 7:30 a.m. And then there's a 15-mile sportive, which starts at 8:30 a.m. And we're saying that it suits regular cyclists and children 10 years and over.
So you don't need to be a Bradley Wiggins to take part. It's just like if you've just got a bit of experience in cycling.
No, you don't. And it's £20 per entry. And this includes insurance.
And how long has it taken to plan the event? Because it's not just something you can whip together in a couple of hours.
You know, we're very involved with British Cycling, and we've got them involved. They advised us on how to tackle it and get the website up to date and linked with their website. And it's taken, I'd say, a couple of months. It's actually one of our members on the committee, Ray. He's an extremely keen cyclist. It was his idea. And he's come up with the route and, with the places where the food and water stations will be, the marshals, etc. You know, it's professionally organised, you know.
Because the route starts in Saffron Walden, doesn't it?
It starts at Great Chesterford Community Centre.
So it's not too far away from Cambridge and...
No. I mean, Great Chesterford is literally on the north border of Essex, and I think it's a mile out of Cambridgeshire, so...
And of course all the money goes towards Buffy Playbus. How can people get involved in the Tour de Buffy? How can they register to take part and put their name forward?
If they want to register, they need to go onto the British Cycling website, which is www.britishcycling.org.uk, and they need to search for the Tour de Buffy, and you can register online. You can also go to our website, which is www.buffybus.co.uk, and there's a link from our website to the British Cycling page.
Have you had a lot of interest so far?
Yes, we have. We've had a lot of interest locally, because Saffron Walden is renowned for, you know, its cyclists and the triathletes around here, and we have had a lot of interest.
That's really good news. And are you looking for all manner of people from all societies to take part and come together?
We are. Which is why we've split it into two, you know, the 50-mile, which is, you know, for quite keen cyclists, and then the 15-mile, and, you know, the children and the parents can get involved in that one.
That's really good stuff. And are you going to be staging any other fundraising activities over the coming months, or is this the big one that you're focusing on at the moment?
This is the big one we're focusing on at the moment, but we have about four fundraising events a year. Our next one is we're having a car boot sale, which is on Sunday the 18th of May, and that will be on Saffron Walden Common Car Park. That's £8 per car and £12 for vans. And then every year we organise a quiz, and that's generally in the sort of around autumn time. And that's very well attended. The last time we had one of those was in Seward's End, and that raised £2,000. So we try and, as I say, organise about four events a year.
Finally, fellow broadcaster Mark Goodyear is embarking on a cycle marathon of his own later this year. He's helping raise money for Prostate Cancer UK by cycling in not just one, but two events. Before we find out more about the events, let's hear a bit more about the voice who's usually behind the microphone. Mark spoke to me back in March.
I've been radio and TV presenter for probably more than three decades. I guess people might know me from Top of the Pops and from Radio 1, although I had a long period on Classic FM and the Smash Hits chart and Radio 2. And these days I run a business called Wise Buddha, which manages Radio Talent and also is one of the world's leading suppliers of radio jingles and radio imaging, amongst many other things too, and I still occasionally do the odd show as well.
Wonderful stuff. And you're going to be taking part in two cycle challenges in Devon and Suffolk. What do these challenges specifically entail?
Well, they are the Saxon Classic and the Jurassic Classic Cycle, and they are organised with Prostate Cancer UK to do a couple of things. Firstly, to fundraise, but also to draw attention to prostate cancer, which is the biggest killer in the UK of men. It's as important a health challenge as breast cancer is for women, and I've been a supporter of Prostate Cancer UK for many years. The Sex and Plastic is a new event, and the Jurassic event I've done to my great pain several times, and I'm looking forward to doing it again.
So how's the training going for this year's events?
It's a little early. These events are in Saxon Classic is in the summer, starting in Ipswich on Sunday, June 22nd. So I'm kind of a little early in my cycle training. My general fitness for a 52-year-old is probably pretty reasonable. I'm on the bike most weeks, but I'm not seriously training in earnest to be doing either the 100 or the 160K yet. I am hoping, I haven't done the route before because it's a new event, I'm hoping that the Saxon Classic is a little easier on one than the Jurassic is, and that because the Jurassic in August is an absolute killer, starts and finishes at Exmouth, and that's a serious event.
Absolutely, it sounds like it is. And are you looking for members of the public, perhaps the listener, to come along and support you or maybe even take part in the event?
I'm much more interested in people coming and participating for themselves rather than supporting me personally. But I'm also interested in people supporting Prostate Cancer UK. And I'll tell you why that is. My father-in-law retired at the age of 65, and by 67 he was dead. And he was dead because he had prostate cancer, which he felt a little bit unwell. And his GP didn't recognize the symptoms that he described a few times. And so from enjoying a long retirement, which he would have been with us today, this brilliant guy, my wife's father, died within, a year and a half of retiring from working all his life. And nobody should be in that position. By that I mean no family should be in that position. No grandmother or mother of adult children should be in a position where that they have to deal with that. And that's why I support Prostate Cancer UK. And what I'd say is, if you're a fitness enthusiast, come and do it because it's brilliant. If you know somebody it's really interesting, in 2013 and 2014 there are many more people who've heard of somebody with prostate cancer because people are talking about it more. There was a time when men didn't talk about those illnesses, but not only is the disease becoming more prevalent in the way that we live today, but also people are talking about it more. So if you know somebody, come and join us and enjoy the ride and raise some money to raise more profile for this remarkable charity that will save lives.
That's absolutely right. So Prostate Cancer UK had a recent advertising campaign, which I think most people will have seen on television, featuring Bill Bailey, and that tugged at the heartstrings for a lot of people. There's been lots of comments on the internet about how successful the campaign has been doing to raise money for the vital cause that is Prostate Cancer UK.
Yeah, I think there's two things about it. It is about raising money, but it's much more about raising awareness, because although the charity does need money to support finding a cure for prostate cancer, it's also the other role of the charity is to make people think. You get to the age of 50, and if you feel a little unwell, don't bottle it up and don't not talk to anybody. Go and see your doctor, because the difference that it could make over a period of choosing to go to the doctor or not over a few months is the difference between life and death in some cases. And think about it for yourself if you're the guy, but also if you're the partner of somebody who perhaps has changed a little bit, and we all do change in middle life, don't we? You know, the awareness thing for the Prostate Cancer UK charity is really important. It's just as important as raising funds. And that's amplified by the Men United campaign that you referred to, that Bill Bailey has done those great TV spots for. But lots of other people, Damien Lewis, Charles Dance, Michael Parkinson, Will Carling, have been very supportive in expressing something about the symptoms or something about making sure that you present yourself to your doctor. These events that the Prostate Cancer Charity puts on, as well as raising money, are about making people think about either their partner, or if you're a bloke, think about your own health, and do yourself a favour, but do your family a favour by going and seeing the doctor if you feel in any way unwell.
So, in less than 60 days, the biggest names in world cycling will descend on Cambridge for the start of Stage 3 of the 101st Tour de France. Bradley Wiggins, Chris Froome and Mark Cavendish, amongst other names, will be battling it out to be crowned this year's Le Tour champion. The race will cover around 3,500 kilometres in its entirety. It'll make up nearly 5,000 hours of TV coverage on 121 different television channels across the world. And finally, locally, over 100,000 spectators are expected to flock into Cambridge on the 7th of July to witness history. Keep tuned to my Tuesday and Wednesday afternoon shows for more Tour de France and cycling interviews leading up to Cambridge 105's live coverage of the Stage 3 leg start in July. More details will be available on our website, cambridge105.fm, in the coming weeks. Remember, if you're coming to watch the race, you need to plan your journey in advance. I'll leave you with a track that I'm sure every British rider will be humming in their heads when cycling through Cambridge's streets in a few weeks' time. Jason Allen's up next. In the meantime, thanks for listening. I'm Matt Webb. Good evening.